Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:36 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 11th. And today, in comment of the day, I've addressed a number of emails where people have been expressing anxiety about the integrity of the bull market such as it is. And this is probably no surprise because my desk has never been so inundated with bearish reports. David and I have been working together since 2003, and in all of that time I have never had so many bearish reports cross my desk at a time when stock markets are hitting new all-time highs. This kind of bearishness is usually reserved for the kinds of times where you have or you immediately following a major market decline. Whereas what we're seeing at the moment is completely opposite to that. Now, what I'm showing you right now is the Barclays high yield spread, and it is at a new low for this move, and pretty close to its all-time lows, or at least the lows for the last decade from 2014. And when we what is it exactly that this is made up by? It's high yield companies that people generally tend to think of as really nefarious or really marginal companies that can't get their act together. But Apple is a major issuer, and that's an A rating. But Tesla is a major borrower in the capital markets, not necessarily all in debt, but it is a B minus, so it is very squarely in the high yield basket. Netflix is a B plus, it's very squarely in the high yield basket. And these are shares that continue to march higher. That Netflix, for example, is really just in the region of its all-time high. And it is pausing in the region of $200. And when we ask ourselves very important filter questions, certainly, is this a steep advance? Yes. Is there evidence of trend ending? Well, the worst that we can say is that it is a bit overbought relative to the trend mean. But we've seen that before. This is a high momentum share. It tends to become overextended, and generally speaking, when it gets overextended, you have these reversions to the mean. We have ample evidence of that from this 10-year chart. So, now, big question, is this a major ending? And I can't see a great deal of evidence to support that claim. Tesla is a very similar story. We know that it is a highly leveraged company. And we also know that they have not been making their production schedule. We also know that it is a company that is married to its growth forecasts, and it is trading at a price to book in the around 12, Netflix around 26. These are expensive companies by any measure, and yet Tesla is holding this move above the $300 area. It has broken out of this range and it continues to march higher. What we're seeing increasing evidence of is incredible bearishness. It's not necessarily that people are saying, oh, the market is due a little bit of a consolidation. And I think that that kind of conclusion would be reasonable. When we look at, for example, that the NASDAQ has moved on to a new high, it has finally broken above 6,000. We're at a new all-time high for the index. But that is being greeted by a great deal of disquiet. Now, why is it that that is happening? Certainly, there was somebody sent through an article today quoting the new Nobel Prize recipient for behavioral economics. This is somebody who has spent their entire life in academia. How much trading have they in fact done? That is an awfully big question. What I find quite perplexing is that David Fuller originated the chart seminar almost 50 years ago and was a pioneer in the field and has received no recognition despite the fact that he has a lifetime of experience in the markets. Then you have people that are receiving Nobel Prizes for the kind of recognition that they get from the hallowed halls of academic institutions, not from financial institutions, even though what they are talking about is the financial markets. So if you are a new person coming into the market and you had to make a prognostication. Well, you know the market's been going up for 10 years. Chances are you'd at least have the good sense to say, maybe be a little bit cautious, because there are certainly problems out there. We know, for example, that that quantitative easing, the massive promotion of financialization of the economy, the incredible size to which central bank balance sheets have risen, and the asset price inflation that that has created is probably going to create a problem at some point in the future. But we could have made that argument last year. We could have made that argument the year before. And what we have had since has been a stock market that has just continued higher. And let's then consider, where are we in terms of the bull market environment? Because it has been our contention for years that we are in a secular bull market, but that we are approaching, and I think right now we are in the latter stages of a cyclical advance. There is no secular bull market, as in extremely long bull market, that isn't punctuated by the occasional drawdown. And I think that that is perhaps our worst case scenario. Now, one of the most important lessons that we learn, and certainly it is our objective to learn from our experience, but the most important lesson is not to apply the linearity of our personal experience to the immediate future. Because if we go back and think about what is our experience of the market over the last 15 years, it is crashes. We have been conditioned to expect crashes. So we had one in 2000, we had another in 2007. So the natural proclivity of people is to say, we are due another crash. And they would then have a great deal of personal evidence, recent evidence, to support that view. But I believe that the most important lesson that any of us can learn is not to learn from our personal experience, but to learn when to apply the lessons we have learned from our personal experience. Because if we go back and look not at the short term, not simply at the last year, even the last decade, but if we go back and look at a considerable amount of time. So, for example, if we look at a logarithmic scale chart for the Nasdaq going back decades, there's one important fact that I don't see many people talking about at all, and it is that the Nasdaq advanced more between 1998 and 2000 than it did in the entire span between 2009 and early 2015. So it did in less than 2 years what it took it after the financial crisis 6 years to achieve. And it has really just begun to break upwards. When we think about the S&P 500 on the same basis, or indeed the FTSE 100, or indeed the Nikkei in Japan, then what are we seeing? We're seeing an increasing number of global markets breaking on the upside. And I think that that's enormously important. We have incredible commonality. If we look at the S&P 500 on a logarithmic scale, what we can see very clearly is that it broke upwards in a dynamic manner. Then it went through a lengthy consolidation, almost 2 years. That was the time when we had the potential for a top formation development. We had clear downward dynamics, we had a loss of momentum, and we even had a lower low. So that was a time when there was a rationale for becoming more cautious. But the market turned around in dynamic fashion and has broken higher. And this is highly supportive of the view that we are in a secular bull market. But like I said, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have a recession at some point. But what are the kinds of things that we should be looking for if we're going to see a recession? And I think very clearly we can see that the yield curve spread is still positive, and it is a reliable lead indicator for for recessions with a lead time of up to 18 months. It's currently around 83 basis points. We already saw the high yield bond spreads, and they are close to new narrows. So if that was trending higher, well, then we would have another lead indicator giving us a positive view for a recession. There's no sign of that either. We don't have top formation development in stock markets. There is no evidence of a loss of momentum, and there is no evidence of an acceleration higher. There are no massive reactions against the prevailing trend. So, therefore, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. There is ample potential that this market could accelerate higher, that we could have a type 1 ending to this medium-term advance. And I don't think that seems to be something that many people are willing to countenance at all. But what we are seeing increasing evidence of is that global stock markets are increasingly breaking on the upside. And the Nikkei has cleared the 20,000 level and is approaching the 2015 high, and 20 years just isn't enough to show just how long this index has been ranging below 20,000. If it can sustain this move, and most particularly move to new recovery highs, we would have to begin to at least give some credence to the view that Japan is back in a secular bull market environment. Now, these are very important views. This is something that that we're not seeing any commentary on in the financial media. That by and large, what we have is extraordinarily bearish sentiment. And part of the reason for that is, I think, threefold. There is nervousness about whether the Trump administration is going to be able to push through their tax reforms, and that is very much open to question. There is continued anxiety about what is in fact going to happen with North Korea. But then we do not know what the impact is of the Fed reducing the size of its balance sheet. That is a clear and present risk, and it is happening this month. So that is going to begin to at least have to be considered over the course of the next, and sorry, my typing has not been effective, but when we look at the 10-year yield, we can see that yields are not surging higher. In fact, yields have pulled back from the 2.4% level this week. I continue to think that this is a base formation, that eventually yields will push higher, but they're not pushing higher in a dynamic fashion. Now, we do have issues that market breadth has deteriorated, and that doesn't mean that it can't get better. There is the very clear message that we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion. And when you get that, it's generally as a response to the fact that central banks have been easing policy for quite a while, and that contributes to global growth. That's exactly what one would expect. That is why that they produce all of that monetary largesse in the first place. Some of the primary beneficiaries of that return to global growth are the resources sector. And the resources sector is on a recovery trajectory. It's the banking sector tends to do better in a recovery scenario for the global economy, and banking indices are breaking out upwards. And then the biotech sector is highly cyclical because it is prone to lumpy cash flows, and it has broken higher. And even Biogen, which led the biotech decline back in 2015, is now breaking up and away from its range. So this is evidence that we're getting a return to performance by cyclical sectors, and they generally are not the ones that we would lead into a recession. They're generally the ones that perform best in the latter stages of a cyclical advance. So that certainly ticks the box. It's the kinds of things like Netflix and Tesla are going to be the things that I consider canaries in the coal mine, and they're still singing. It's when they get a cough, when we start to see topping formation development in those kinds of shares that are highly leveraged and therefore highly sensitive to rising interest rates. Those are the kinds of shares that could likely peak first. If we see the technology sector rolling over, then that would be an additional sign. But we know what a recession or what happens in the lead up to a recession. We know what can happen. People are worried about a 1987 type flash crash, and that is a risk in the era of high frequency trading. But again, we do not have evidence right now of massive leverage in a very in a rising interest rate environment. Interest rates are really only just starting to rise. We do have a lot of leverage. There is a considerable amount of margin debt out there, and that figure is going to get updated again at the end of this month. And we also are at a point where corporate profits, that figure hasn't been updated yet either, but they are close to record highs and really do need to break out to new high ground to justify the valuations such as they are. But against that background, what we probably need is a bearish catalyst to realize some of the bearish prognostications, and there just isn't a great deal of evidence for it. That as long as we have indices that are breaking up out of long-term or medium-term ranges, then we kind of have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. It is quite clear that the oldest adage in the markets is that a bull market climbs a wall of worry, and there would seem to be a lot of people really quite worried. I think it's also worth looking at gold. This is gold's fourth consecutive day on the upside. It is now bouncing from the region of the trend mean and the region of the upper side of that underlying range. This is a natural area for it to find support, and it is doing so. So as long as it is holding that $1,265 area, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And when we look at the commodity complex, I think we have additional evidence for a return to performance by sectors that are leveraged to global growth. And despite the fact that there has been a great deal of bearishness expressed about copper, it has so far its reaction has been limited to a relatively equal size reaction, and it continues to hold this $3 area on the COMEX contract. So this also represents a return to demand dominance and potential recovery. Just because we're in the latter stages of a cyclical advance does not mean it's over. And I'm watching closely, and I think I've identified a significant number of indicators that would suggest that this cyclical advance is ending, but none of them are flashing red right now, in which case there is the possibility that markets accelerate higher. And that is currently viewed as the least likely scenario by the majority, in which case, from a contrarian perspective, it could perhaps be one of the most likely. That's not a prediction, but it is something that we should at least begin to consider the potential for. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.